Hello and a very warm welcome to Radio Prague International with me, David Vaughan. Today we bring you the second episode in our series, A Stitch in Time, looking into the recent past through the eyes of the youngest generation. We invited children and teenagers here in the Czech Republic to write a story about a member of their family who influenced or inspired them. Their stories take us from the second half of the 19th century right up to the present day.
I ran down off the boat onto the dock, frantically scanning the mass of people waiting there to see if I could find my brothers.
Blažena hardly breathed. Nothing was left in staré kniničky.
Ruženka's father came back from the war, but he wasn't the same as he used to be.
In this episode, we start in 1876, boarding a ship heading from Europe to America. Then we return to Europe and travel forward in time to the First World War, and then to Czechoslovakia in the years just after it was founded in 1918. We hear from Gabi Gardner from Prague, Martin Rada from Brno, and Janeta Malková from Sezemice, a small town about 100 kilometres east of Prague.
My name is Gabi Gardner, and I am from the U.S., but I have never actually lived there. I've only lived in Europe my whole life, Prague and Germany near Frankfurt. I am 15 years old. I read about my great-great-grandfather, who migrated from Germany, Worms, to Nebraska. I pushed through the crowd, lugging my suitcase behind me. It bumped over the uneven road, and often into those moving around me. They threw dirty glances my way, but I wasn't paying attention. The smell of sweat, salt water, and anticipation stung my nose. I picked up my pace. Through the thick mass of people, I was just able to see the name of the ship sprawled across its side. It said Die Heldin. In English, that means the heroine. My foot slammed against something hollow. I looked down. Wood. I had made it to the dock. I ran. I remember my suitcase feeling lighter in my hands as I raced to the end of the dock. There were more people crammed onto it than it could really hold, and it creaked with each of my frantic footfalls. The nearer I got to the end of the dock, the more shouts rose around me. Angry people. Really angry. I understood, though. They had probably been waiting for weeks. Some maybe even months. But I just pushed ahead. But I had to keep pushing. But then I got to a point where the people simply wouldn't budge. They stayed where they were, no matter how much I tried to shove my way in. That was when I began to panic. I craned my neck to see what was causing the roadblock. Then I saw it. I was meters away from where the people boarded the ship. Slowly, painfully, people began to shuffle forward to board. The closer I got, the more excited and nervous I became. It was almost as if adrenaline had replaced my blood. Within an hour, I had gotten to the entrance of the ship. I remember my heart being in my fingertips when the man held out his hand to see my passport. I fumbled to dig it out of my suitcase. Ah, that suitcase. It held not more than a single loaf of bread, a small wheel of cheese, a photo album, and a stack of stationery to write letters home once I arrived. And of course, my passport. The actual case itself was in very poor shape. The leather handle had lost its color from years of use. The gray-green color on its body was peeling off too. Yet, it was the only thing that I had from my old life as I made my way into a new one. He's sort of one of the most, famous relatives in our family. We talk a lot about him, and we have a whole binder at home of information about him and his brothers and his parents, and so I think it was just a natural choice for me.
There really is no one alive who would be able to tell you much about him, so how did you go about researching?
Well, I mostly just relied on the binder. There weren't a ton of details. I had to sort of add a couple things in. For example, I didn't necessarily know the name of his ship, but the boy that he shared his food with was actually real. And I also know for a fact that he had just a wheel of cheese and a loaf of bread. That same morning, I had said goodbye to my father, mother, and sister. And now I was at the docks. I knew that was not something that happened very often. I was very fortunate. How long it took me to notice that is something else altogether. I thought about my family the most. My mother, father, and sister couldn't come with me. They had to stay in Germany, at least until another ship came in. My two older brothers, Peter and John, had already left Germany and were waiting for me at my destination. I hadn't seen them for a very long time. I remember the day my father, Peter Gardner, told me that I'd be making the journey alone. I have never felt as much fear in my life as I did in that moment. He turned to me with love and fierce determination in his eyes and said in a low voice, "Son, you're going to have to take the new boat that is coming next week." Simple words that changed everything for me. I liked my life. I was learning the family trade, making shoes. And I had just passed the test that my father set me to prove I was ready. He was a very stern but loving man. He learned shoemaking from his father, and he wanted all of his sons to be able to do the same. He wanted nothing but the best for his children. That's why my parents saved up all of the money from the family business to buy me a passport and ticket to be able to travel. They believe that there were opportunities waiting for me in the new land that I couldn't get in Worms, my hometown. How I loved that town. It was small and fairly insignificant, but it was everything to me. I had never actually been outside of it. Now, in 1876, I was going to go far away from it. You see, I was going to take this boat all the way to the Americas, a place where they didn't speak my language, where I didn't know how things work, and where I didn't have a home.
He came from the town of Worms. Have you ever been back there?
Yes, actually, we went back a few years ago, and we got to see the church where he went to regularly, and just see other small little landmarks that have been passed down through the family, like, for example, a fence that he used to climb over to, steal fruit from his neighbors. So it was just cool to see those little things. After what felt like forever, everyone had boarded. Suddenly, the boat started to move. We set off for what were the longest 3 weeks of my life. I slowly ate away at the cheese and bread as the days wore on. This drew a lot of jealous stares my way. There was a boy who sat right in front of me, and that looked even hungrier than the rest. In the end, I introduced myself to him and gave him a pretty sizable amount of my food for the part of the trip that remained. He ended up being very good company for the rest of the voyage. That's about all that happened on the boat. It was pretty repetitive, as you can probably imagine. In the end, that little corner got very uncomfortable. I had finally arrived at a port in New York State. I was already rallying all of my remaining energy for the next step of my journey, a train to Nebraska. As soon as the captain announced that we had arrived, I threw all of my things haphazardly into my suitcase and dashed out of that steerage. Let me tell you, I never looked back. I ran down off the boat onto the dock, frantically scanning the mass of people waiting there to see if I could find my brothers. Then my eyes were drawn to two tall, young men. One was waving frantically in my direction. When I looked at him, his eyes lit up. He nudged the man standing next to him, who looked up and began waving too. They both had huge smiles on their faces, and I'm sure mine was double the size of theirs. I rushed through the people into the warm embrace of my brothers that I had missed more than anything. My life would never be the same, but I was certain that the life ahead of me would be better than the one I left behind.
He went to the United States, the American dream. What happened to him?
Well, he took a train to Nebraska and he set down roots, and eventually all of his family, his parents and his other siblings came over as well, and he became a foot doctor. So he took the shoe business a little farther.
And obviously he's well remembered in the family.
Yes, he really is. Yeah, my dad is pretty proud of him, and I've kind of heard stories about him my whole life, and we have different pictures of him and his wife hanging on our walls around our house.
Gabby's great-great-grandfather sailed from Europe in 1876. Our next story brings us back to Europe and to what is now the Czech Republic. We go forward in time to the First World War and the years that followed.
My name is Janeta Malková. I'm 15 years old and I'm from a town named Sezemice in the Czech Republic. I choose to write about my great-grandmother, Růženka. I didn't sadly have a chance to meet her because she died a year or 2 years before I was born. So I didn't have the pleasure of meeting her, but I have heard a lot of stories from my grandmother and even some from my mother. So I think I would like her if I would meet her. My great-grandmother, Růženka Kindlová, was born on 21st February 1914, a few months before the First World War started. Her family's financial situation wasn't the best, especially since her parents had to support 4 children in total. Their life changed after their father was sent into a war. By that, Růženka's mother was left alone with 4 little girls to take care of. Their life situation got worse every passing day. Their mother couldn't leave them alone and find herself a job. She was a housewife, and Růženka was only a few months old, so the only thing she could do was to send her children to go help the farmers to earn a few coins. And so, a new circle of life has begun. A few years passed. It was the year 1918, and Růženka's father came back from the war. But he wasn't the same as he used to be. He wasn't the man they used to see every day. It was as if someone completely new replaced him. He became more aggressive, angry, and abusive. He even physically abused his own children. War can truly change a human into a monster. When Růženka was old enough, by that I mean she was only 5 years old, she, as the youngest in the family, was sent to beg for food. It was humiliating for her, to say the least. Růženka also earned something by selling mushrooms and berries on the marketplace. With her sisters, she was also sent to work on farms. Sometimes the work was too hard for the girls, as they didn't have much strength.
And your great-grandmother had to do things at a younger age than you that would be probably quite unthinkable for you.
Yes.
How was it to reflect on that?
I was really shocked. I was always kind of interested in wars, but I haven't really heard about someone my age or like someone who experienced something like this in my age. So I'm still in school, but she was already working. So I can't really imagine myself doing something and earning money from it.
And they were so poor that she was even having to beg as a child.
I really get anxious around strangers, and so I can't really imagine like begging for food, because it will be really embarrassing and humiliating. So she's already super amazing in my eyes just from that. As years passed by, Růženka started going to school. She was a very smart girl, but due to her family's poor financial situation, she had to leave her home and start working after she turned 14. It wasn't just her, though. It started with her older sisters. When they were around 14 to 15 years old, they had to leave and start earning their own living, because their father refused to support them anymore. Her parents sent her to a dentist's house to work. Růženka did housework and even helped in the dentist's consulting room. And thus, a new chapter of her life started. Thankfully, she was finally doing well. She had enough clothes to wear, she had enough food, and didn't have to spend nights starving like she used to. The dentist and his wife were also very nice to her and even let her eat with them at the same table. Things finally started to look brighter. When Růženka turned 18, she met her future husband, Oldřich Svatoš. After a year of knowing each other, they got married and moved to Ústí nad Orlicí. They lived here for 12 years. During that time, Růženka also gave birth to two daughters, Irena and Zdena. Around the year 1947, Oldřich got a job offer in a business manufacturing medical devices in Sezemice. So they all moved there. After settling down and living there for a few years, Růženka had another child named Milena, my grandmother. In conclusion, as hard as life can be and push you to your limits, there's always a reward waiting for you. Whatever it is, it will be worth the pain. All you have to do is to not give up.
That optimism that you talk about, that there's always a reward waiting for you, that's really very optimistic, isn't it?
Yes, when I did a test or quiz for whether I'm optimist or pessimist or realist, I got pessimist. So it was really funny for me to write something like this, and my teacher's reactions were like, oh, that's really nice, that's really optimistic. And then I was like, yeah, it really is. And I kind of was also speaking from my own experience, so I can guarantee that in most cases it really becomes true, that after some hard time there's always something better and brighter waiting for you.
This weekend had been as every other weekend. Nothing unusual had happened. Every person worked on their fields. Kids were either helping parents or hanging out in the streets of the village, running around and playing a variety of games. Until the polite neighbor came with a message saying something unusual. He told her, "I'm sure you've already heard the message, haven't you? About the session in the local pub. Weird, right?" said the guy, and the surprise was visible on his face. "No, we haven't heard anything about it. What kind of meeting is it supposed to be?" "There's nothing to discuss. I don't have much info, but I know that the mayor is calling all the inhabitants of the village. Even the council is gonna be there, every member." I'm Martin Rada, and I live in the Czech Republic. I actually live close to Brno. I chose to write about the flooded village that was close to Brno, and the village was flooded because the Brno reservoir was supposed to build, and it happened, I think, in 1920s. So my great-grandma lived there, and a year ago we had a Czech project where we were supposed to make a family tree and find some interesting stories about our family. And this was the most interesting family story I found, and so that's why I decided to write about it. On the way, many people met their friends and gossiped about the meeting. So many theories were exposed, yet Blažena didn't agree on any of those theories. She had always said, "People are always pretending to be smart even though they don't know enough. People may look like they are smart as owls, but it actually is different." After 5 minutes, the council let people into the pub. The mayor went ahead and said, "We all know you came here not knowing what to expect. Well, it is serious enough. The Moravian Committee of the Lands has presented a plan for a new reservoir close to our village. Brno needs a new source of water, they say, and apparently the city has also funded the building of the reservoir." At that moment, all the people realized that the village was not going to be theirs anymore, and they all would have to sell and leave their houses, fields, and probably friends. Luckily, the mayor was friendly and felt sympathy with all the families. The council understood the issue as well. But still, by the end of the day, nothing changed. People had to leave and sell their position. 6 months later, all the inhabitants of Staré Knížky left the village, all knowing that the village was most likely going to be flooded. Some people still believed that the project would be dismissed and people could buy their things back. Unfortunately, that never happened. Almost 8 years later, they began digging and building around the village. The landscape was devastated. In addition, the village itself was officially abandoned. At least the majority of the buildings were still standing there, and people could look at their old houses and remember their happy moments. It had been almost a year after they began building. Blažena woke up and saw a newspaper lying on the kitchen table. The newspaper was open on the third page, and there was an article with the title, "Flood completely destroys buildings around the future Brno reservoir." According to the article, the flood destroyed all the buildings and other things when the Brno reservoir was still in the process of being built. That included all the houses in Staré Knížky. Blažena hardly breathed. Nothing was left in Staré Knížky. All the buildings collapsed. Nobody could go around and look at their houses anymore. Moreover, it was quicker than people thought. All people thought that at least the houses would not be destroyed, and even if they couldn't live there, they could have had memories connected with the actual buildings. However, the flood made a different plot. Afterward, the building of Brno Reservoir was finished and the citizens of Brno could have a water supply. The reservoir is still there till now. But Staré Kniničky is just something in history books, journals and all maps, and in the stories of its former inhabitants.
How does it feel to have this feeling that part of your family comes from a place that no longer exists?
It's actually an interesting feeling because I know the Brno Reservoir is there, and I know that Kniničky, the part of Brno, is still there, but the part where my great-grandma lived is not there, and it's actually an odd feeling, but also very interesting.
And there's a sentence in the story, as you write it, that I really love, where you say, people are always pretending to be smart, even though they don't know enough. People may look like they are smart as owls, but actually, it is different. There's a wisdom in that. Is it something that you share, this view?
Yes, I do share it, and I think my family also shares it. And even though I've never met my great-grandma, I think this is what she would say and she would thought.
Most of us, we try to pretend, don't we, that we know more than we do because we're afraid of losing face. So it's a brave philosophy, I think.
It definitely is. Like, I think everybody, like every single person, thinks that they're smarter than they actually are. And being modest is at the second place, not the first place, is to be smart. The second thing is to be modest.
Do you think it was necessary to flood the village? Do you think that sometimes sacrifices like this are needed?
I don't think it was necessary because I think there were more like places where they could build the reservoir. But I think that the village wasn't important for the Moravian community, so they decided to flood it. Unfortunately.
I was talking to Martin Rada, whose great-grandmother Blažena came from the lost village of Staré Kniničky, just outside Brno. In this episode, we also heard from Gabi Gartner and Janeta Malková. The music was composed by Bára Dočkalová and performed by Vít Beneš. In next week's episode of A Stitch in Time, we'll be moving forward to the darkest period in this country's history, when Czechoslovakia came under the shadow of the swastika. Don't forget that you can find all the stories, in both text and as read by their authors, on the webpage A Stitch in Time, on Radio Prague's website, radio.cz. For the time being, from me, David Vaughan, and all of us here at Radio Prague International, goodbye.